evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, June 12, 2018. Riek Machar and President Kiir agreed to meet in Addis Ababa, according to a SPLA-IO spokesman.
We see it as a step forward because he's been in detention for going on 2 years without charges. And this was really hampering the peace process. And so now we see that there's a major breakthrough if the two principals who are the leaders of the major warring factions can meet and come to some kind of working understanding.
And a new report says a number of people in South Sudan could be considered stateless.
Today's launch of the report marks a new stage in the fight against statelessness in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus today on June 13th, 2018. The rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition say the Ethiopian Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed Ali, has invited Riek Machar for a face-to-face meeting with President Salva Kiir in Addis Ababa on June 20th. SPLM-IO spokesman Mabior Gareng confirmed to South Sudan in Focus that SPLM-IO chairman Machar will travel from South Africa to Ethiopia next week to meet with President Kiir. He says the agenda of the meeting is not known, but the two leaders are expected to address some of the sticky issues blocking the road to peace in South Sudan.
It's a big step for people of South Sudan, for Dr. Riek Machar, the leader of the main armed opposition, to meet President Salva Kiir face to face. We see it as a step forward because he's been in detention for going on 2 years without charges. And this was really hampering the peace process. And so now we see that there's a major breakthrough if the two principals who are the leaders of the major warring factions can meet and come to some kind of working understanding, then the rest of the peace process will move on more smoothly. This is finally a very good sign of progress.
In your press release, you are thanking IGAD for facilitating this meeting. But this is the same IGAD that you have been criticizing and saying that they are not neutral. They have been behind the confinement of the leader of your party in South Africa. Why this change of heart?
Because also they are also showing positive signs. So we also reciprocate also with positive signs. And we also have to remember that the IGAD is a diverse body. What we have said is that we salute the courage of the IGAD, because it was very courageous of them to make such a decision with such a divided opinions. I mean, we have said before that the formula for negotiations is flawed, because President Salva Kiir and his political-military allies, some of them are party to the conflict and mediators at the same time, and senior mediators at that who can bulldoze processes. So we have to be careful when we say IGAD, because even us, we are part of IGAD.
From your press release, you mentioned that President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will meet on the 20th of June in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. This is at the invitation of the Ethiopian Prime Minister. What is the topic for this meeting? What are the issues that these two leaders are going to discuss?
I am not privy to that information, and it is within the letter. The agenda will be within the letter. But like I said, we are trying to move with these small steps. And so this invitation is the first step, and we will await further communication from IGAD regarding the agenda and these kind of things. As you know, our chairman has been detained, and he was incommunicado also for a few days, which caused some alarm. But our communication sometimes are limited.
The SPLM-IO has been using the word detained. You have used it several times in this interview that your chairman has been detained in South Africa. Who detained him?
Well, if you go back to the communiques of the IGAD, the Assembly of Heads of State and Government, and the Council of Ministers, and some other press releases of IGAD, the IGAD has now has acknowledged that they are the ones who detained our chairman. We are yet to hear what were the charges and all this, but this is not what is important for us at the moment. What is important for us at the moment is how are we going to find peace, because
if President Kiir and your leader Riek Machar agree on the way forward, and if the South Sudan opposition alliance are not in agreement with you, it's still that's an obstacle. Why is it difficult for SPLM-IO to merge with the South Sudan opposition alliance? What are your issues with this alliance?
Some of the opposition groups in the South Sudan opposition alliance still have members in Juba. It's a contradiction to be South Sudan opposition alliance, and then some of the members of South Sudan opposition alliance are in the parliament in Juba, are ministers in Juba. There are other South Sudan opposition alliance leaders whose position is that Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir should both go. But for them to be able to have a voice to say that Dr. Riek Machar should go, it is the pressure of the armed struggle waged by the SPLM in opposition that pressures the government and brings them to the negotiating table. And so the position of some leaders in the South Sudan opposition alliance is closer to the government than to other people in the opposition. But there are other leaders in South Sudan opposition alliance that we are still talking to. The process of unity will take confidence building. It is not just a matter of uniting for the sake of uniting. It is uniting based on shared objectives.
That's Mabior Gareng, spokesman of the SPLM-IO. He was speaking to my colleague, John Tanza. A report by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says an undetermined number of people in South Sudan are at risk of statelessness. The report finds that ambiguities in South Sudan's Nationality Act and other nationality regulations, including use of the word indigenous, contribute to an increased risk of statelessness in the country. As we hear from Waki Simon Wudu for VOA in Juba, a top government official agrees the government needs to address the issue.
Aside from ambiguous language in the 2011 Nationality Act, South Sudan is not a party to the 1954 Convention relating to the status of stateless persons, which defines a stateless person as someone who is not considered a national by any state under the operation of its law. Nor has South Sudan ratified the 1961 Convention on the Reduction of Statelessness. UNHCR officials say they launched the report with South Sudan's Directorate of Nationality, Passports and Immigration, or DNPI, in a bid to address the problem. Johannes Sifonte is the UNHCR country representative in South Sudan.
Today's launch of the report marks a new stage in the fight against statelessness in South Sudan.
The new report does not provide an estimate of the number of stateless people in South Sudan, but it highlights the factors that put some South Sudanese at risk of becoming stateless. It found that the secession of South Sudan, procedural gaps in processing national documents, and a divergent application of provisions in the nationality law for certain ethnic and minority groups puts some South Sudanese at risk of statelessness. Sifonte says UNHCR and Directorate for Nationality, Passport and Immigration officials are working to prevent statelessness in the country.
Since 2012, UNHCR has helped more than 12,000 individuals at risk of becoming stateless people in South Sudan. 12,000 people were helped to obtain nationality certificates. And UNHCR, we commit that we will continue promoting nationality certificates, birth registrations, and other nationality documents to those who are entitled to.
The report also says a lack of a civil registration system, underfunded state institutions, and the ongoing conflict are major risks of statelessness in the country. And even though there are DNPI offices in all the 10 former states, UNHCR says some people have to travel to DNPI headquarters in Juba in order to get their nationality certificates, which is often a difficult and expensive journey. Colonel Madut Maduot is the Director for Logistics and Procurement at the Directorate of Nationality, Passport and Immigration. He says the ongoing conflict puts too many South Sudanese at risk of becoming stateless.
Insecurity that is in our country nowadays prevent many mobile teams from DNPR to access places like far places to give documents to our citizens.
The reporter says some people, like nomadic pastoralist groups, are unable to acquire documents because they are not considered to be South Sudanese. Others cannot acquire nationality certificates due to the costs and procedures involved in the lengthy application process. And yet other people are questioned because of their physical characteristics. For instance, a light skin is reported to undermine applications for South Sudanese nationality. Antipas Nyok, South Sudan's national coordinator to the International Conference of the Great Lake Region in the president's office, welcomes the report, but says the government must follow strict procedures while issuing national identification documents to citizens.
You cannot just get anybody a ride and give the document. No. You must be very sure that he or she is really staying in South Sudan, is a peaceful citizen, and is a useful citizen to this nation, and then we'll be able to give the document. So this is why there are regulations put, because human beings are not easy. Because human beings are also useful and they are also deadly in a way.
The reporter recommends that through legislative amendments, government lawmakers should include a specific provision on prevention of statelessness in national legislation and review the nationality legislation to ensure full compliance with the 1961 Convention. It also calls for adequate funding to the Directorate of Nationality, Passport and Immigration in the state budget so the agency can effectively implement nationality legislation and related procedures in the country. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
President Salva Kiir has sent dozens of police generals into retirement. The decision comes a few weeks after Mr. Kiir criticized police officials during a police leadership conference in Juba for not reducing the nation's crime rate. A police spokesman says the move is part of a plan to reform South Sudan's National Police Service. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Police spokesperson Brigadier General Daniel Justin says more than 30 police generals have been relieved from service while others were promoted.
We have some police officers have been retired. We have seven lieutenant generals and then 29 major generals. And then also we have 18 officers being promoted to different ranks. We have one lieutenant general who is appointed to be the director general for nationality, passport and immigration.
Justin says President Kiir's decision to relieve top police officers of their duties is in line with the Police Act, which gives the president the power to appoint and fire police officers. He says it's routine to retire officers when they reach a certain age, but he also says it comes on the backdrop of their last conference with Kiir and the need to reform South Sudan police. Justin says during last month's police leadership conference, the president gave the police officials specific directives to bring in new officers and to improve their relations with the public.
The public, they were raising some concerns, complaints about our individual behavior in the police. And this is actually, that is why even the conference is, the theme of the conference is reform and transformation of the police to make good relations between the police and the public. So it is a process. And yes, we have some police who are not in line or sometimes they mistreat the public.
Justin says the directive is also about bringing in fresh officers.
The directive from His Excellency the President was the general reform for the police, and we are working on that in terms of bringing in new blood, especially young officers. As you have seen, the last graduation, all of them were below 29 years old.
Justin says other measures to improve the police service across the country will involve capacity building and more training to professionalize the force.
We are urging the public, whenever there is something which is not in place, they are to report it, because many cases are not reported to us as the administration of national police, but instead they are reported to the media. Because when we get the report, we will take measures, because the law is there, very clear, stating how the police should behave.
Justin promises the retired officers will receive their full benefits. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The South Sudan government says it will return property grabbed from residents. More on that when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can leaders do to stop the flow of migrants from Africa to Europe?
I think the best thing that leaders should do is to improve the economic situations, make sure that young people have jobs so that they are not attracted to greener pastures outside their countries.
The cardinal reason why people migrate from African countries, those developed countries, is the increased corruption in their countries. Yeah, if governments try to fight corruption within the country, that means service delivery will be consequent.
Living in Africa sometimes is a little bit challenging. So if leaders could provide amenities like the European countries, then people may not want to migrate.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has ordered the return of property, including land belonging to the Muslim community taken by government agencies and certain well-connected individuals in Juba. Presidential spokesman Atenuek Atent says Mr. Kiir has tasked the South Sudan National Security Service to ensure the return of the property. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Atent says President Kiir issued the order on Monday while addressing Muslims during iftar, which means the time Muslims break the day-long fast during Ramadan. Atent says the decision to return the land was made after several complaints by South Sudan Islamic Council officials that property was grabbed by officials leading government institutions and other individuals.
They have come to office of the president several times, those Muslims, in an attempt to find something to solve the problems. Most of the time we tell them to go to the court, because if a land is taken without due process, then the court in South Sudan is capable to adjudicate on matters related to the lands and any other property that might have been illegally seized by the state authorities.
Atenge says now that the president has ordered an investigation and a return of the property, the South Sudan Islamic Council does not need to take the matter to court. He says the South Sudan National Security Service will work with the South Sudan Islamic Council in Juba to ensure the safe return of the land to the rightful owners.
Much of their properties has been seized, and the governments, various government of states and state government have since refused to return Muslims' properties to them, particularly lands. Should there be confirmed cases of Muslim properties being taken without compensation, those properties must return back to the Muslims.
But Atenge says the South Sudan Islamic Council must first prove any property in question, including land, belongs to them.
The president gave directives to the Minister of National Security to look at what kind of properties are they, because there has to be identification of those properties, so that properties that belongs to institutions that are not Muslims and belonging to individuals that are not Muslims could also be identified.
Atenge says Juba security officials will also investigate land or property reportedly taken by force from the Muslim community in the other parts of the country. South Sudan in Focus made several attempts without success to get a comment from the South Sudan Islamic Council. Officials said Abdallah Rual, the Secretary General of South Sudan's Islamic Council, the only official authorized to speak was out of the office. South Sudan in Focus also made repeated calls to Sheikh Juma Zeid, President Kiir's advisor on Islamic affairs, but those calls went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
An Italian Coast Guard ship today brought more than 900 rescued migrants to shore in Sicily, even as a diplomatic dispute escalates over Italy's refusal to let another rescue ship dock. The migrants on the Italian ship are mainly from Eritrea, Sudan, Mali, Ivory Coast, and Guinea. They included scores of children and several pregnant women. Also aboard were the bodies of two people who died during their crossing. A few days ago, Italian officials refused to allowed the Aquarius rescue ship to land with more than 600 migrants, saying Italy has taken more than its fair share and other nations need to take more. Spain offered to allow the Aquarius to dock at the port of Valencia. Rome's refusal to take the Aquarius raised pressure on the European Union to do more to address the flow of thousands of migrants across the Mediterranean. Italy today demanded that France apologize for comments President Emmanuel Macron made about Italy's position. A new report by the international human rights group Amnesty International criticizes both the Cameroonian military and separatists fighting the independence of the English-speaking region for using unnecessary and excessive force. The rights group says civilians are frequently caught up in the violence. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the English-speaking northwestern town of Njukwa, which has been completely deserted due to the fighting.
It is a very quiet Wednesday morning here at the English-speaking northwestern town of Njikwa. Hundreds of men and women usually assemble at the town's daily market, but now there are only about half a dozen men. 43-year-old trader Claude Oyebok says everyone fled when armed separatists attacked their town and killed a policeman, and the military reacted with extreme force.
As I'm talking to you, I don't know where my mother is, my brother or my sister.
After the attack, armed separatists claimed on social media they had occupied Njikwa. Shu Canisius Numfo, Cameroon's highest government official in the area, says the fighting scared the population and thousands escaped to the bushes for their lives.
We are struggling to get in connection with the funds of the 9 villages so that they should talk to their people, that they should have confidence in the forces of law and order who are here to guarantee their security. The government is in place, the forces of law and order, they are there to continue with our routine activities.
Njikwa is just one locality in which Amnesty International says civilians are caught in a deadly escalation of violence between the military and separatists seeking an English-speaking state. Amnesty says Cameroon's military has responded with arbitrary arrests, torture, unlawful killings, and destruction of property. It says in one striking incident, satellite images and other photographic evidence it obtained show the complete destruction of the village of Kwakwa, which was burned to the ground by Cameroonian security forces following an operation conducted in December 2017 in connection with the killing of two police officers by suspected armed separatists. Military spokesperson Kanedide Bajek has described as unfounded allegations that the country's soldiers are using excessive force on the population and separatist fighters who, for the most part, are using locally made guns.
On a l'impression qu'ils partent de ce qui est dit dans les médias sociaux.
He says Amnesty should stop basing its findings on what is published on social media and go down to the affected villages and bushes. He says the reports persist in demonizing the Cameroon Defense Forces and that Amnesty should note that the state of Cameroon, as any other state in the world, has the right of legitimate defense. He says in spite of the derogatory report, the military will remain professional as they have been. Unrest began in Cameroon in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the north, west and southwest began calling for reforms and greater autonomy. They marched on the streets, criticizing what they called the marginalization of English speakers by French speakers. The government responded with a crackdown and massive arrest and detention of suspects and a three-month internet shutdown. Separatist groups joined together and started calling for the independence of the English-speaking from the French-speaking regions. The government said the fighters torched schools and killed at least 44 police and military personnel. The separatist leader, Ayuk Tabe Julius, was arrested along with dozens of his collaborators in Nigeria and extradited to Cameroon. They have not been seen in public since January, and their followers have used social media and vowed to paralyze the country until Ayuk Tabe and 47 others are released. More than 70 villages have been torched, and the United Nations reports that hundreds of thousands have fled for their lives to the bushes and towns in the French-speaking regions. At least 20,000 have crossed over to Nigeria. 200 have died, and hundreds are missing. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Njikwa, Northwestern Cameroon.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Kotosa by the group Wuta. With the song Kotosa. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about our show. Send us your comments on the web to southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can find us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.